We here at SciShow don't need to tell you that science has led to the discovery of some pretty worrying facts. Sea levels really are rising, pandemics really do happen, and Valve still doesn't have a release date for Half-Life 3. But sometimes those shocking headlines don't really match what the researchers actually said. The media grapevine can take a normal paper with appropriate caveats and turn it into an unmitigated shocker. Not SciShow, though. We're cool. I promise. While there, of course, are some real concerning things happening in the world right now, not every scary science headline is what it seems. If you're watching this video, you probably love some critical thinking about good science, so sit back, relax, and let us put your mind at ease. So first of all, you might have heard that a spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, but have you heard that there's a spoonful of microplastics in your brain? If you have, there's a good chance that that news didn't make you want to bust out into song. A team of US researchers set out to find how much microplastic was making its way into our organs. They got liver, kidney, and brain samples from cadavers and used a method called PYGCMS. Basically, they used chemicals to dissolve all of the organic tissues in the sample, which left behind any inorganic solid that they could measure. And the researchers found that people who died in 2024 had nearly 1.5 times more microplastic in their brain than those who died in 2016. The samples from 2024 had almost 5,000 micrograms of microplastic per gram of brain tissue, which, if you take the average mass of the human brain as 1,300 grams, that's 6.5 grams of plastic just in your brain, or about the mass of a plastic takeout spoon. That's bad news bears for you if your preferred amount of brain plastic is zero, and that is my preferred amount of brain plastic. That's the amount there should be. Fortunately for us, some other researchers have reason to believe that we don't actually have as much plastic clattering around up there as the initial study suggests. Their critique has to do with the methodology. PYGCMS is known to overestimate the amount of plastic in tissues, and our environment has a lot of plastics already, so even in a high-quality lab environment, that has the potential to contaminate the process. Secondly, the process of performing PYGCMS can create byproducts that mimic microplastics. For instance, fat molecules release some of the same compounds that polyethylene plastic does during PYGCMS, and the brain tissue is about 50% fat. So some of the compounds that were reported to be microplastics might have just been normal old fat. Plus, the researchers only looked at about 50 brains total, which isn't a huge sample size. Like, some would argue that that is too small to draw meaningful conclusions from. And all this said, we're not even sure what the health implications of brain plastic are. Even though it's hard to imagine that it would be good for you, we simply don't know if microplastics cause health problems or are just associated with them. And I feel like if there were a whole plastic spoon of microplastic in my brain, I would have noticed. I just feel like I would have noticed. Also, while we're at it, you are definitely not eating a credit card's worth of plastic every week. I did a video about this a couple of years ago, in case you are into being unscared about plastic. And if you're super into being unscared about plastic, we've got another one for you. Another recent scary plastic-based headline isn't about your brain, it's in your kitchen. There was a recent hullabaloo about how black plastic cooking utensils like spatulas and stuff might contain dangerous amounts of flame retardants. And I don't know about you, but my grandma's secret ingredient was love, not flame retardants. The flame retardant that people are specifically concerned about is called decabromyldiphenyl ether, or DECA-BDE. DECA-BDE was found to be possibly bad for humans, so the US Environmental Protection Agency started banning its use in 2009 and completely banned its manufacturing and distribution since 2021. However, sometimes it can still show up in black plastic items due to manufacturing quirks. See, the EPA didn't ban the recycling of plastic products with DECA-BDE because they calculated that any plastic that already contained it had it at such low amounts that it would be super unlikely to cause any health issues. But a group of scientists from an organization called Toxic Free Future wanted to confirm that. So they analyzed 203 black plastic household products for flame retardants, and more specifically, bromine, which is in DECA-BDE. Out of these 203 items, the researchers narrowed down the top 20 plastic products with the most bromine in them. These included toys and hair accessories, but they were mostly concerned with contamination you could possibly ingest. Look at you, kids, putting that black plastic toy car in your mouth. But this is why you only really heard about this in relation to your cooking utensils. The researchers calculated that black plastic utensils may be leaching about 35,000 nanograms of deca-BDE into your food per day. The EPA says the safe limit for deca-BDE exposure is 7,000 nanograms per kilogram of body weight, which the authors of the study calculated to be 42,000 nanograms per day for an adult who weighs 60 kilograms. That 35,000 nanograms from utensils sounded way too close to the 42,000 limit for comfort, which is why they raised this red flag. But the mathematically inclined members of our audience might be screaming at their screens right now, for good reason. The EPA limit of 7,000 nanograms per kilogram per day times 60 kilograms is 420,000 nanograms, not 42,000. So what actually happened here was a misplaced comma made the problem seem 10 times worse than it is. There are still trace amounts of flame retardants in those black plastic spatulas, but the level is well under what the EPA considers safe when you do the math correctly. So if you didn't get around to replacing all your black plastic utensils yet, you could probably cross that off your list. And before we get to our next not-so-scary headline, here is a quick ad break.
This SciShow video is supported by Brilliant, an interactive online learning platform. There's an app for everything these days, and knowledge building is no exception. If you're really trying to level up your science knowledge, Brilliant's app can help get you there. I know you pick up your phone tens, if not hundreds of times every day, so you can make some of those times way more productive on the way to achieving your learning goals. Brilliant helps you make a habit of learning a little every day, all from your phone or computer. And it's available to try for free at brilliant.org/scishow. QR code on screen or the link in the video description. You'll also get 20% off an annual premium subscription.
The next story is a lot bigger than anything in your kitchen, like the size of your planet's atmosphere. If you were tuned into the news anytime between the 1980s and the 2010s, you probably heard a lot about that hole in the ozone layer, which is really less of a hole and more of like a thin spot. The ozone is a protective layer of gas around the Earth that shields us from harmful solar radiation. So when there's a thin patch in the ozone, we get less protection, and all living things are at risk of like DNA damage and also really gnarly sunburns. Scientists found that a major driver of ozone depletion was chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. These chemicals used to be super common in household products like refrigerators and in aerosols like hairspray. But welcome to the 2010s, when CFCs had to go. They were banned by an international treaty called the Montreal Protocol, after which the entire world phased out products with CFCs. Hooray, problem solved. However, in 2018, you might have heard about this, some scientists found that the levels of CFCs in the atmosphere weren't dropping as quickly as they should, indicating that there were some renegades still making these CFCs. The researchers traced the secret CFCs to a few factories in eastern China, and thanks to international cooperation between scientists and Chinese authorities, the factories were shut down and the ozone is again back on the mend. So now the ozone hole is on track to be fully healed within the next few decades. You can't stop the motion of the ocean or the sun in the sky, but you can stop our hairspray from hurting the planet. And if you're like me, all you heard was that CFCs were going up again. You didn't hear about the part where we noticed and did something about it. Now, our next scary headline to debunk is about your diet. Intermittent fasting is a popular diet pattern that is mostly defined by the times you are eating. Usually, you'd spend around 16 hours not eating and then eat all your daily nutrition in the remaining 8-hour window. Lots of people choose intermittent fasting for a variety of reasons, including losing weight and a whole slew of other alleged health benefits, although the evidence behind how well it works is mixed. So it might be shocking to hear that according to a conference presentation at the American Heart Association, intermittent fasting was associated with a 91% higher risk of cardiovascular death. And at first glance, this looked like really solid science. The American Heart Association is a reputable professional association, and the study looked at over 20,000 participants. The important part here, though, is that this data was presented at a conference as preliminary research. That means the work hadn't been peer-reviewed or formally published yet. And for those that read past the headline, the authors were clear that the findings came with a few caveats. First of all, the participants' diets were classified as either intermittent fasting or not, based on their own recollection of when and how much they ate, and they only recorded 2 days of meals. It's possible some of these people just had like a weird eating pattern for a couple of days and are not all in on the intermittent fasting lifestyle. It's also very easy to forget what you ate for breakfast 2 days ago ago, much less at what specific amounts or exactly which hours you started and stopped, which is why self-reporting data needs to be taken with a hefty grain of salt. Plus, this study looked at association with cardiovascular disease, not causation. There were a few things that weren't accounted for, including the fact that people who try intermittent fasting may already have other risk factors for cardiovascular disease, such as obesity, that may be motivating them to try the diet. Some other studies have suggested that intermittent fasting is actually good for your heart as a side effect of losing weight. But even then, experts aren't 100% convinced that intermittent fasting is the way to go. Clearly, the research is mixed on this, and we need to wait for more research to be done. So whether you're team intermittent fasting or more of an all-day grazer, we can't really say for sure if any mealtime patterns are gonna mess with your heart. Hopefully, that helps settle your stomach a bit. Now, our last entry on the list is also about your health, but it does not have to do with your food. This time, the threat identified by scary headlines was tampons. A 2024 study looked at a variety of tampon brands and types and found that they contained traces of 16 different heavy metals, including arsenic, cadmium, mercury, and lead. And that's especially bad when you think about where those tampons go. Arsenic is a well-known poison, and we are rightfully hammered over the head our whole lives about the dangers of lead. And given the tampons are only relevant to people who have periods, discovering secret metals may feed into current biases that you may have that menstrual health is undervalued and understudied, which honestly can't blame anybody there. But before you purge your bathroom cabinet and switch to Diva cups, you should know that most of these metals were in trace amounts, like billionths of a gram. The metals they found in the highest amounts were zinc, with an average of 52 micrograms, calcium, with an average of 39 micrograms, and iron, around 3 micrograms. And you eat thousands of times more than all of those in your daily diet. That said, we've only ever really studied exposure to these heavy metals through the oral route, so we don't know for sure if the amounts that we know are safe to have in food are equal to the safe amounts in period products. Even for metals like lead, for which there is no safe amount of exposure, the researchers didn't look at how much can actually get absorbed into the body from a tampon, which means it's possible that we just don't absorb any lead through that route. But you might be asking, how are these heavy metals getting into the tampons in the first place? And probably it is from the plant materials in the tampons. Plant-based fibers like cotton and rayon are often naturally exposed to metals in the environment, and those metals can get sucked up through the soil into the plant. This study was also a broad overview, not a deep dive. The researchers only sampled 1 to 2 tampons per brand and absorbency type, which is not a big enough sample size to say anything definitive. Still, everyone deserves to be safe from heavy metal contamination, so it's definitely worth further research to make sure. In the US, tampons are regulated by the FDA, and after the original study was published, the FDA launched a lab study of their own in late 2024 to follow up. And they found nothing. So far, the folks over at the FDA said that there's no reason to panic and throw out perfectly good tampons. And really, isn't this what science is all about? We are surrounded, on all sides, by people expanding human knowledge in exciting ways. Sometimes that knowledge is excitingly positive, but sometimes a tiny claim that comes with nuance and caveats gets blown up into a definitive, splashy statement, and that can cause panic or feed into upsetting storylines that just aren't true. Of course, not every shocking science headline is wrong, but they get their excitement from being new, and science always requires repeated trials and further validation. After all, the information that is the most surprising is what's gonna get you the clicks. The stories we talked about today aren't examples of science going wrong or being unreliable. Science moves forward when researchers present new ideas to the public and other scientists for other studies to investigate and verify. But we hope that presenting a more balanced way of interpreting scary-sounding headlines can put your mind at ease and prevent some undue panic. So the next time the news is telling you to throw away your favorite cooking spoons, maybe just keep them in a drawer until the other researchers weigh in.